Just another quiet week in the Pac-12. Nothing went wrong. No chaos ensued about the conference championship game scenarios that actually played out even worse than the scenarios. Great leadership. Colorado got hosed again. And now their equipment truck is stuck in between LA and Colorado, waiting to see if they even need to go there. Cal got knocked out of their game last week over a false positive test. The reviews, your reviews. And we're going to recap last week's games, give our predictions for this game, where, of course, I'll destroy Ralph again. And the Pac-12, you're going to get to pick your own bowl game and your own bowl game opponent. The Pac-12 trophy will be given out. Protocols must be followed, though. And next episode, we're going to give our National Signing Day review and talk about that. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy, and of course, share the podcast, because this is the podcast by Pac-12 fans, for Pac-12 fans, people who want the truth. They don't want it sugarcoated. They want to be entertained and they want to hear the truth. Please make sure that you leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Ralph will tell you 4 stars, then we'll grow into whatever it is. And when you become part of the family, no, this is a 5-star production, Ralph. Stop asking for 4 stars, please. We're better than that. And you guys, please make sure you share the podcast more than anything with somebody else who will enjoy it. And you can get a hold of us on Twitter. Him at Ralph Amsden, me at George Reister, the podcast at Pac-12 Apostles, where you could get responded to by either one of us. And you should guess that. Guess who actually responded to it. Maybe we should start a segment called Who Sent That Tweet? But yeah, so please share, or you can shoot us an email. I'm mad. I'm mad at unafraidshow.com. Okay. So Ralph, what was your assessment of this last week in the Pac-12?
I ended up very confused by Sunday night because I was out at a couple of high school championships on Saturday, and my routine is usually to come home. I usually get home around midnight, sit down, and I watch the key plays from the games that are recorded on YouTube TV. Then I get up on Sunday morning and I actually speed through the games and watch them if I can't watch them live. And so I got home and I'm trying to go through the key plays of the Cal game and couldn't find it. I didn't even know. I mean, I knew that Washington, Oregon was going to get canceled going into the day, but I didn't know that Cal wasn't going to end up playing Washington State. And so that was kind of confusing. And then, obviously, you know, I did catch the first half of Arizona State, Arizona, which I think my guy down here in Arizona, Joey Artigue, he totaled up all of the biggest margin of victories for rivalry games in the history of the Pac-12, and this is the biggest one ever. So there was definitely a lot of talk at the championship games that I was at Friday night and all day Saturday about what happened between the two Arizona schools. Found that to be very interesting. The little bit of football that I did get to watch on Saturday, it looked like Colorado was holding their own against Utah. Next time I check in on the score, they'd gotten blown out. So, you know, a lot of Keaton Slovis fans down here in Arizona. So I was getting updates on the USC UCLA comeback as it was happening, and ended up going back and rewatching that game, and it was a good game. It wasn't my favorite game of the weekend. That distinction belongs to Stanford and Oregon State, which was just almost like the perfect football game up until the heartbreaking end for Oregon State. But I mean, the games that did get played were very interesting, and I'm glad that we get to talk about them. I'm kind of feeling bad for Washington State and Cal right now, and for the entire Pac-12 North, in that they don't have a real champion.
Yeah, and the first thing, one of the first things that you mentioned that was hilarious to me was how the games even like played out. So we knew Washington, Oregon was going to be canceled, but then we find that I am watching games. I have two TVs stacked on top of each other on the wall, and then I have my computer hooked up to my like big monitor. And then I swung that around. So I figured that out. I was like, hold up. I got three screens. I got two 50. I got a 50, well, a 58 and a 60 incher. And then this 42 inch for the monitor. So I'm like, yo, I'm sitting pretty over here. I turned on the Cal game on the monitor and I was sitting there waiting on it to come on. I put it on Fox and then it was, I thought it was like commercials. And I'm like, yo, this is a lot of commercials. I was like, oh, they must have had a weather delay or something like that. And then eventually nothing happens. Like they don't go back to the studio show or anything. So then I flip back. So I'm like, okay, something's up. So I go on to an app to see what's going on with the game. Game canceled. I'm like, where the hell did this come from? Where the hell did this cancellation come from? Turns out Cal had a false positive test. That one test that contact traced them out of a game that they could have otherwise played because it was a false positive. Cal has buzzards luck, dude. If the best thing that's happened to them this season is beating Oregon, because I don't know how that happened, but the fact that it did happen and the way that the rest of their season has gone has been an absolute disaster. It's been a mess. The rest of the weekend, though, we found out that, well, actually, the Pac-12 championship, we talked about the scenarios about what could happen. And Ralph was like, at the end, I said, do you understand, Ralph? He was like, nah, I don't get it. Whatever. And so what ended up happening is the Washington-Oregon game gets canceled, sends everything into a tailspin. And then the conference puts out a schedule on Sunday. And Ralph, can you explain to me why, knowing Washington's situation, Washington has no linemen. They know that they have no linemen. They're pretty sure they can't play. And the conference knows that. So why on earth would you put out a schedule on Sunday knowing that that game can't be played? I mean, that Washington probably won't be able to play, but you put out a full schedule on Sunday.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what exactly, if anything, Washington would have told the Pac-12 about the possibility that they might be able to play. I'm wondering if some people were waiting on test results or what, but it from the sound of it and from what you're telling me, it was probably never feasible that this game would ever get played in the first place. So the schedule was set up as such that Oregon could just be there as a replacement.
Yeah. So they had Colorado playing Oregon in LA in case Washington couldn't play. But then you're like, teams still have to game plan and all of this. But then how can Washington even travel down to LA? Like it was nonsensical. And instead of giving Washington a drop dead date, they didn't do that initially. And thank God Washington is led by competent people, Jill Cohen, Jimmy Lake. They were like, on Monday morning, they said, we can't play. We can't play because Monday is actually Tuesday in game planning because the game's on Friday. And Colorado and Oregon were scheduled to play on Saturday in LA.
Absolutely hate that, by the way. In a year in which it is critically important, all the time that that you could need to possibly heal up or test negative or get outside of COVID protocols, that they would be this stringent on making sure that the Pac-12 championship is played on the worst of all days to play football
on Friday
is something that only our conference could try to pull off.
I still can't understand, why would you put your conference game on Friday when everybody else's conference games are on Saturday? And you're like, oh, well, good. Well, that's why everybody else is playing on Saturday, because that's the day college football is supposed to be played. So Washington gets thrown out of the game because they can't play. people were saying, okay, well, just have Colorado play against USC. Well, that's not the way the tiebreakers have worked. So then they throw Oregon in the game. And that leaves Colorado without a game. So Colorado has nobody to play. Nobody to play. So it's a disaster, dude. So and what that turns into is Colorado's now the backup plan in case USC or Oregon can't play. So then they have to pack up their equipment truck, keep practicing for a game that they're probably not going to play this weekend because Oregon has played almost short last weekend. Their last game against Cal, down a bunch of scholarship players. They were down in the 50s. You have USC who just battled COVID, so the likelihood of them going back out is probably low this quickly. So Colorado packs up their equipment truck and has it drive halfway in between Colorado and LA. So it's somewhere like in St. George, Utah, which is about 5 hours away from LA.
Beautiful
I know because I went there.
Beautiful town. I love it. Home of Panay Sewell.
Yeah, I went there in May. I loved it. And my kids are like, yo, we need to go back there. I like Utah. We went to Zion, all that stuff. So Colorado's equipment truck is stuck there waiting to see what's going to happen. And this is an absolute cluster, Ralph. A cluster.
Yeah, I mean, so what is the plan? Is if Oregon backs out that Colorado would play USC?
Yes. According to John Wilner, yes.
Huh. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that would that's probably if it ends up being two Pac-12 South teams for the Pac-12 South or for the Pac-12 championship, I can't imagine that's going to provide the ratings bonanza that Larry Scott was hoping for in scheduling this game on a Friday opposite ABC's Olaf's Frozen Adventure and Shrek the Halls. And don't forget that the Masked Singer has a 2-hour special on Fox
on Friday,
on the 8th.
Dude, I watched that. My daughter and son, they'll be trying to fight me over the TV.
yeah. I mean, the Pac-12 might lose out to the CW, which is airing Christmas Caroler Challenge. So it's gonna be a rough go for this game, having the Pac-12 North's representative be a Pac-12 South team. I'm gonna be interested in this for sure, especially if it ends up being Colorado USC. Because this is a game that we wanted all along, and that we said that USC would potentially be in danger of not being able to get the job done because of the way that Colorado runs the ball. But Colorado kind of choked things away against Utah. That makes it a little bit less interesting. However, what do you think the odds are that Oregon actually plays in this game?
100. I mean, why wouldn't they play in the game?
Yeah, so then we're talking about Colorado for no reason, basically.
Yeah, Oregon's playing in this game, no matter what, basically. They would have to be they played Colorado either at or under the scholarship minimum. So, I mean, they would have to be well beyond that to not play the game. But Mario Cristobal has already updated people's availability in terms of they haven't said what they were coming back from, but they're going to be close to full strength. So, I mean, provided there's no weird outbreak or something this upcoming week, because they are the only team that hasn't. Well, them and Colorado are the only two teams that haven't had to cancel games because of their own situation. Oh, well, in Oregon State too. So yeah. There will be a championship trophy handed out though, Ralph. So if Oregon wins, they wouldn't have won the North, but they didn't get a chance to play Washington for sure for the North either. because the winner would have gone to the Pac-12 championship. But if they win, they get the Pac-12 championship trophy, which is kind of like not winning the conference in basketball, but then winning the tournament trophy. It's two separate things. So, but the trophy is going to be given out with protocols. So if you're Oregon and you win this, are you winning this with pride? Are you displaying the trophy with pride?
I mean, I guess. So here's the thing. We have like this whole rebellion against participation trophy culture. Yet in 2020, that's the thing that you celebrate more than anything, is that if you even get the ability to participate. So all these people that made fun of the participation trophies, like this is the year where you would actually take pride in one, that you were able to finish the race kind of. And so I'd be proud of it. I think it would stand as a reminder of an incredibly unique season, one that is hopefully not ever repeated again.
Yes, we can hope and we can pray that never happens again. Ralph, No. Here's another interesting thing that you pointed out to me, that when it comes to the bowl games, because we see every day, well, every couple of days, new bowl games get axed. They're even considering moving the Rose Bowl. Well, not playing the Rose Bowl, because it has to be in Pasadena because of the tie-in with the Rose Parade to actually be called the Rose Bowl. But anyways, they were considering moving it because players' families from the ACC and SEC may not be able to go to the games because of California protocols. But the conference will be able to decline bowl bids, but then schedule any opponent. Is that it?
I think you have the ability to decline a bowl bid. And I think that because of the lack of bowls, the NCAA, from what I'm hearing, is stepping in and saying that you can schedule your own postseason game after December 19th. So, and you could have gone 0-5, and you can still schedule one game after December 19th. So it'll be really interesting to see if we have some inter-conference matchups get set that are completely outside of the bowl structure, or some intra-conference matchups that maybe didn't get played during the season, or that wouldn't have based on regular scheduling, you know, between maybe an SEC East and West team or something like that. So that I'm really looking forward to seeing which teams, some of these teams are just going to straight up decline the opportunity to play, like University of Arizona. We'll get into why. I think that is a great move by the NCAA.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely think that's great as well. It is time for our reviews, though, Ralph. What's up with our reviews?
I didn't see any yesterday. Do you have any that magically appeared in the last 24 hours?
No, I have not seen any reviews. So good job, people.
Remind the people on how they can leave us a review and interact with us.
Yes, this is one of the most fun segments of the show, where we read your reviews, whether they are positive, negative, all of that, and we hope for 5 stars. Ralph tries to encourage people to give us 4 stars, and when we don't deserve 4 stars, I think that we are a 5-star podcast. And he tells people just give us what you think that we deserve. I don't believe in that.
Do you ever read that study though, where like the New York City hot dog cart says just pay what you think we deserve, and they end up making more money?
Seriously?
Yeah. I think I saw something about this. I wouldn't have made this up. Obviously you can't give somebody 6 stars, otherwise, you know, I think that would work to our benefit. So it's not really an equal case study. But yeah, I think that it was either a hot dog cart or some type of street vendor they did away with their traditional pricing for their food and just said, pay what you can or what you think we deserve. So they did away with the traditional price structure altogether. And I think, if so, hopefully somebody can check us on this, but I think they actually came out ahead of what their typical sales would be minus the cost of the food and everything like that. So that maybe that's my philosophy, that I feel like if I enable people to participate and do what they think is right, then maybe they won't be able to give more than the 5 stars allowable, but maybe it frees them up to participate a little bit more through the comments, which enhances this portion of our show.
All right. I can do that. That almost makes me want to set up a hot dog cart or some other low cost food situation and say, listen, just give me what I deserve for this burger. Give me what I deserve for this hot dog. Listen, I'm not mad at it, man.
You end up coming out in the red after one day, I'm going to get my ass kicked though. So just make sure you read whatever it is I'm talking about, because I definitely don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I remember reading about it once.
All right. So Ralph, on to last week, the recaps from last week. What was the damage from last week? Because I talked about how bad I was going to beat you. Wait, no. That was on one particular game. Which game was that, which I said I was going, that you made the most horrendous pick ever?
I don't know, because we agreed on, what I had go wrong for me is the stuff that I agreed with you on, because you had a really bad week again. So
I did, Ralph, I demand a recount. You guys, if you guys think that Ralph's fudging the numbers around here, send
you can't trust me these nuts, cause it is starting to look like I'm cooking the books. That's how bad this is getting. You went 1-3 on the over unders. You went 2-2 straight up and 0-3-1 against the spread.
Jeez, dude. Yeah. How does that happen? You almost have to try to be that bad.
I don't know, but you are currently 4-9 on over-unders, which you personally introduced as a way to get back at me, because you know how bad I am at them, and I'm 10-3. So things keep moving in the opposite direction. We have the exact opposite records against the spread. I'm 16-9-1, you're 9-16-1. And then straight up, you're still within striking distance. It's 16-10 versus 18-8. I have a 2-game advantage.
This is not how this was supposed to go, Ralph. This is not how this was supposed to go. All right. So we'll start with the game that happened on Friday. It wasn't an actual football game. I called you during the game because I didn't see the beginning of the Arizona State-Arizona game. I peeked in about the middle of the second quarter was when I was going to start back at the beginning, but I was going to pop in live and then rewatch the end. We rewatched the beginning later. And mind you, I didn't finish this game at all, but when I popped in, it was 35-0. I was like, what?
Like I walked in second quarter.
Yes, as they were running in the touchdown for 35, I was like, what? I expected them to lose, but this was just non-competitive. Like, you are the Arizona expert. What, I mean, and you said it was going to be bad at 42-14.
Yeah, that, but like, look how wrong even that was.
I don't, bro, 70 points? Like, all right, look, I'm a person who just in general off the rip, I support black coaches because they don't necessarily always get the opportunities, even though Kevin Sumlin is a guy who is a retread. But in general, they don't always get the opportunity. So I do want to see them succeed. But when they get fired, what am I supposed to say about Kevin Sumlin getting fired, going 9-20, losing 12 straight, and then getting fielding a non-competitive team in the Territorial Cup. Arizona State can't even score 70 points. Can't even score 70 points, and you get 70 points put on you, and all you can put up is seven?
I did see someone on Black Twitter, the greatest of all Twitters, call Herm Edwards an enemy of the culture for the 70-7 score.
Oh, like he got another black man fired?
Yeah.
Hey, man, listen, you can't help anybody that ain't there for help themselves. That's the only thing I can say. You have to help you. Nobody else is going to stand up and fight for you if you don't fight for yourself.
So, what would you rather talk about? The game, which was bizarre, and Arizona State did not run up the score. I don't care what anybody says. That game could have been so much worse than 70. I thought
they could have scored 100 points.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Maybe not, if they were really flexing, like if they really got it is technically possible that they could have, but as it stands, they did have a long drive in the fourth quarter that didn't end in any points. And they missed a field goal in the first quarter when it was 14-0. It could have been 80.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. At least. But I think the only thing that's okay. So Arizona State didn't run it up. They only threw the ball 13 times. Jaden Daniels only threw it 11 times. I mean, I don't know but it was 9 catches for 203 yards. That's 18.5 yards that's an average of 18 and a half yards.
It's two brutal, touchdowns. Man. Grant Gunnell got knocked out of this game. They had a Sullivan, the defensive back, he got tossed out of the game, threw up a middle finger on his way out. That was kind of funny. I don't know, man. It was just so they give up the opening kickoff, like 105 yards, to DJ Taylor, a freshman, who I even had to look up. I was like, who's this dude again? And I covered the team for 5 years, and the name was foreign to me. And then you have your boy fumbles on what was kind of a hasty, bad Brightwell.
Yeah. He had three balls that touched his hands that ended up in Arizona State's grasp. Yeah.
And then ASU, like that run that ASU scored on to make it two touchdowns in the first 56 seconds, like no one even touched Trainum. And that's when you knew, like, oh, they're going to get whatever they want in the running game. And they did. They did. Rashad White and Trainum, they really, really embarrassed the Wildcats. And then the worst possible. So two things happened in this game that made this game legendary for all eternity outside of the score. One is it's 63-7, and it's pretty cool for the city of Tucson at the time, not the score, obviously, but that Rhett Rodriguez was in at quarterback for University of Arizona, and Trenton Bourget was in at quarterback for Arizona State. Both of those kids are from Southern Arizona.
And obviously, finally, you get some Arizona kids in a game versus Fred from Arizona State.
Okay, yeah, but it was but they're both from Tucson, so so that was really cool just to see, and they're in Arizona Stadium, and that was kind of a cool moment in it of itself. And then they hand the ball off to Jackson Hee,
yes,
from China, and he scores a touchdown, but he didn't just score a touchdown; he got hit at the one. And he managed to kind of roll his way into the end zone. So he earned it. He definitely earned it. And then Arizona State's website crashes from people, I'm assuming abroad, looking him up on the ASU site. And I thought that was just a really excellent moment and really cool and super historic. And then University of Arizona's social media team tweets out the final score with a picture of Lorenzo Burns next to the 70-7. And that tweet probably got quoted 1,500 times before they finally deleted it, with people asking what Lorenzo Burns did to deserve that. Because not only is Lorenzo Burns like face being on that tweet completely inappropriate and absolutely hilarious. He was also in his 40th start and maybe was the only player that showed any heart during that game.
Yeah, dude, that was absolutely disgusting and bad. And Jackson, he was the only worthwhile thing from that game. That wasn't worthwhile watching unless you are, I mean, I guess if you're Daniel Nada's mom who hasn't gotten a lot of carries, then yeah. If you're Ricky Pearsall, yeah. You know, then yeah, you're a, it was worth watching. If you're Stanley Barry Hill the Third or Nathan Tillman's parents, then yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Stanley Barry Hill was one of three players this week who transferred immediately after their game was over.
Did they even drop their jersey off, or they just walked? Did they just walk to their car dressed?
Well, so they announced that Kevin Sumlin got fired, and Stanley Berryhill, who's an interesting kid, he went to high school in Arizona and then transferred to California for his senior year. Then he committed to walk on at Arizona State and changed his mind. He flipped his walk on commitment to U of A, and then he ended up being their best receiver over the last 3 years, even as a walk-on right there in his hometown. And he straight up, it's not as bad as Drew Dixon opting out of the season 2 weeks ago after getting his only three catches of the season, but it's pretty bad that you as a walk-on who earned a scholarship turn around and enter the portal. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody do that before.
Yeah, that's wild, dude. That is absolutely wild. Next game up, dude, this game was, I was, okay, so in all transparency, I live with a UCLA graduate, super fan, my wife, and we have season tickets to the Rose Bowl when the Rose Bowl's open, really, because it's not this year. So we go to a lot of games, all this, and so I would say UCLA is like my second favorite team in the Pac-12. And I've never really been very fond of USC. And they're a big rival of Oregon, too, because they compete for recruits, all this. And I like to be right. Above all of those things, I like to be right. And this was a game I would have bet the farm on this game, Ralph. I would have bet the farm UCLA was going to win this game. And I was right until they gave up 20 points in the fourth quarter. Like, they just imploded. Like, everything was going as planned, Ralph. I went into the fourth quarter up by 11 points. No, 12 points. Went up 12 points in the quarter to start the fourth quarter. How do you blow that? Like, I don't know whether it was a fake punt, whether the punter didn't punt it, whatever it was a terrible situation. It was a disaster. And UCLA's defense just fell apart after they had such a big lead going into the fourth and they were playing so aggressive. Dude, I credited this game more to UCLA losing the game than USC winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, except USC has done this to so many teams this year that I don't know.
They did it to ASU and they did it to Arizona. Neither one of those teams is a good football team this year.
We don't know.
How don't we know? Arizona just got beat 70-7.
One of those teams is the one that scored 70. And one of those teams had a lead on UCLA and USC with less than 5 minutes left in both games.
That's crazy, bro.
All I know is second half Keaton Slovis is incredible. And if he's not careful, they're going to start calling him Keaton Start Slovis. But what do you think? Malapai ran for 110 yards on 19 attempts. I don't know how long it's been since USC had a 100-yard rusher with less than 20 attempts. That feels like that's pretty foreign for them. And USC actually did a decent, not a great job, but a decent job of holding UCLA's running backs to less than 5 yards a carry. Britton Brown averaged 4.9, Demetric Felton 4.3. And if you take away the 40-yard run from Demetric Felton, he had 20 carries for 50 yards.
Yeah, they were doing a good job against the run game. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, 30 for 36, 364. Heading into the fourth quarter, I was like, yo, he's playing his best game ever. I was like, yo. And I remember I told Nish, my wife, I was like, yo, I don't trust him, dude. I don't trust him. But today he's doing it. Then all of a sudden, damn wheels fell off. I was like, oh, God. Oh, God. But this is what you get with Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Like, yeah. He's good and terrible. Like, there are times where the dude is super good. And you're like, wow, this kid's very, very talented. He could be nice. And then sometimes you're like, if you look at his 10 best throws, you're like, okay, this kid's an NFL quarterback. You look at his 10 worst throws, you're like, who's the backup? Like, and that's not all time. That's just in a season.
Yeah, I don't know. He's coming back next year, right? Like, he's still around.
He would be a dummy to do that, dude. That would be a very poor decision to come out in the draft. Extremely poor.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It would not even be a good idea for Keaton Slovis to come out in the draft. But at least he would be drafted.
Yeah. I don't know. This game was weird. USC did the same thing they did to everybody else. They won, and then you walk away thinking that they weren't the better team, but all they do is win. I've been cracking up at the idea that every single week, all this team does is win, and at the same time pisses off their entire fan base. This fan base wants Clay Helton fired so bad. So that they can go out and get someone who gets them the exact same result in a little bit different way. And I can't get over how funny that is to me. Because, like, I'm a basketball fan. And so if my team won on a buzzer beater every single night, then I'm just like, all right, scoreboard. But USC fans cannot handle the idea that they're – and there is the idea, the very real idea, that in the end everything regresses to the mean – and at some point, this is going to come back to bite USC, and that might be this weekend.
Dude, and they all – the funny part is they're 5-0, and they're all digging their heads in the sand. They're like, no, 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 because they know that Clay Helton is on the verge of getting an extension. They know it.
Oh, my God.
So they're like – and, I mean, how do you fire a coach who – what is he like – 10-0 in his last 10 games? What do you do with that besides give him an extension?
What do you think that feels like? So, like, you're down in the fourth quarter. There's a final drive to win the game, and part of you wants them to blow it so that you'll fire the head coach, and the other part just wants to be able to root for your team to win, which they are consistently doing week in and week out. Like, what does that feel? That's got to be such a bizarre inner struggle. What did you think about Keaton Slovis saying that he checked out of the running play that was called to throw the game-winning touchdown?
I would say that that's a kid who has a good handle on the offense, and that as a quarterback, you want a quarterback who can overcome coaching, where he's like, mm-mm, this ain't it. Let me go do what the best thing is to do. But I don't know. I thought that was a what they call a check with me, where it's two plays essentially called, but the quarterback can choose to do one or the other, because he wasn't at the line. He didn't check it at the line. He just chose to do something else. And once he saw he actually did check. And then wide receiver, what was his name? The kid from Modern Day.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown. He moved in some, and I was like, oh, he's creating space. So he wasn't going to run a slant, because they weren't going to risk throwing a slant in that situation. But a fade, he wanted to make sure that he had enough room from up there. So if you're the UCLA defender, you have to understand the situation that he's not going to run a slant because of the situation, because balls get tipped, all of that, and you're got a chance for game, that would be a terrible choice. So I would have been playing fade all day and found me an interception. But, you know, I've played a lot more football than these kids have. So, you know, it's not a knock on them. It's just is what it is.
So this is interesting that they, going back to last year, they have played in 9 one-score games. 9 one-score games for USC going back to the beginning of last year. And I think they're like 7-2 in those games and 12-2 in their last 14 in the Pac-12.
Yep. And the last one they lost, they got demolished by Oregon. So we'll see what happens this weekend. On to Utah and Colorado. This was a game that looked like it was trending in Colorado's direction. Utah went up 7-0 in the first quarter. At halftime, it's 14-10. Colorado's up. And then I think Colorado scored next, and they were up 21-10. And then the wheels absolutely fell off of Colorado. They looked like Colorado at the end of the last two seasons, where everything just falls apart. Sam Noyer, he got hurt for a minute, right? Yeah. He got hurt for a minute. Jarek Broussard, you knew it was going to be tough sledding for them running the football against Utah, because they get stronger as the season goes on. They get stronger. And Colorado finished 27 rushes, 110 yards. Yeah, and this was just not a good performance by Colorado on the defensive end in the second half. And they lost two fumbles and threw an interception too. So that didn't help at all.
Yeah, so this is the first time that Jarek Broussard has been outrushed by the other team all year. They not only lost Noyer for a minute and had to put in Tyler Lytle, who is the second person this week to immediately transfer after the game because he only had 24 yards of offense. I think he was like 2 for 7 passing or something like that, and then he quit the team right after the game.
I just wonder where do these kids think they're going to go?
Because I don't know, because the transfer portal is so full. Like, you're talking about, if you're Tyler Lytle and you produce 24 yards of offense against Utah and then you immediately jump into the portal, I mean, you're probably talking about like CSU Arkansas Pueblo. State?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking like D2. Like, you can't.
Yep, probably. Yeah, no. I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, I was aiming way too high.
Yeah, and that part's nuts. And then on the other side, I talked about always getting confused when it's Ty Jordan or Jordan Wilmore. Jordan Wilmore, he bounced. He hit the portal right after this game on the Utah end. That's a running back that I think still has a really high ceiling. And I think you and I actually talked this week and said UCLA is a team that should maybe make a push for somebody like him. UCLA or Oregon State, either one could really use him. But I think he sees Ty Jordan and realizes that Ty Jordan is the guy. Ty Jordan had a monster game. I think he had 147 yards rushing. But
you can have two running backs. You can have two running backs.
You can, but if you look at the history of Utah, they really rely heavily on one. Whether it's Devontae Booker or Zach Moss. And that's why
if you're really good, they'll find a way to get two guys the ball.
Maybe. I think Jordan Wilmore is really good, though. I think he
I do too.
Thinks that he can go. And maybe it's with that free transfer that's out there or whatever. And who knows what else is going on.
He'll find a home faster than Tyler Lytle.
Oh, absolutely. You're not kidding there. But Colorado had some bad luck in this game. They got Nate Landman knocked out of the game. They got Sam Noyer knocked out of the game. And that really allowed Utah to just pin their ears back and focus on stopping Broussard, who only had 80 yards rushing. Very interesting. Brendan Rice scored twice. He's still a freshman. He is out there looking like N'Keal Harry, and he's going to be really good for a really long time. But yeah, I mean, Utah just what a dominant second half.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah, it was a,
it makes up that, it makes up for their second half against Washington, doesn't it?
Yeah, they did the complete opposite thing that they did against Washington. The last Pac-12 game of the week, though, was the late game, Stanford at Oregon State. Stanford has started out 0-2. Now they're 3-2. Oregon State started out 2-2. Now they are 2-4. I just can't make sense of this. So Oregon beats Stanford, and then Oregon loses to Oregon State, and then Stanford beats Oregon State. And with Jamar Jefferson, I know that the quarterback makes a big difference because they didn't have Tristan Jebbia, who I think is very average, but he's better than Chance Nolan.
Chance Nolan balled out in this game, though.
I was getting ready to say that. He did throw 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Completion percentage wasn't that high, but their wide receivers aren't exactly, you know, burners or finding a whole lot of separation either. So it makes quarterbacking tremendously more difficult. But they didn't have, and he's very mobile. What do you have? 8 for 50.
And he fumbled the shit out of that ball at the end of the game. Oh my God. I've never seen a ball get out that quick.
He was like, blow the whistle.
Blow the whistle. Oh my gosh. They went, I felt bad. They went and they got to review it because it's the game on the line or whatever. But then they're just showing replay after replay of him basically just literally throwing the game away. I felt awful, man, because he played so well. It was a clean game. There were no turnovers besides that, were there, in this whole game?
Stanford did not throw a pick, and Stanford did not fumble. No. And, yep, yeah, that was it.
This game was so clean. It was back and forth. Both teams scored in every single quarter. There were some absolutely ridiculous throws made. There was a catch. I can't remember the name of the receiver, but in the fourth quarter, there was a catch by one of the Stanford receivers where the ball popped out as they were both going to the ground, and the ball hung in the air, and the Stanford receiver, while he was laying on his back, it just fell into his chest.
I think that was Bryson Tremaine. It was either him or John Humphreys.
John Humphreys. That's right. It was his only catch. Yeah, it was John Humphreys because I remember John Humphreys was Ethan Garber's main receiver in high school. This is the only podcast where you're going to get these high school throwbacks. John Humphreys' high school stats are ridiculous. Probably the best of any receiver that came out last year. And so it was kind of cool to see him get involved. But yeah, that catch was absolutely nuts. This felt like an NFL game. It really did, because neither team was breaking big plays on the ground. I think the longest rush of the day was 25 yards by BJ Baylor. But you get a 25-yard rush in a game where every rush is like 6 yards. It feels like 50. Davis Mills played good. Chance Nolan played way better than I expected. There were only 4 total sacks, so it wasn't like super messy. And outside of that fumble, which I hated that the game ended on that fumble. I was hoping it might have even gone to overtime. This was probably the most fun I've had watching a football game all year. This was a great game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was a really, really, good football game. Well contested, you know, like coaching was cool. Davis Mills has quietly been playing pretty good.
It's like rivals might have been right about him. I can't take it that far. He had some nice throws, though. He really did. Yeah, he didn't make any mistakes.
He just looks solid. Like, he doesn't look special. He looks solid. He looks like AJ McCarron, if that makes sense. You know, like one of those Alabama quarterbacks that's not NFL caliber. I know AJ McCarron's been in the league for a minute, but you get what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. If you surrounded this guy with talent, he would do what Mac Jones is doing this year. He would kill people.
Yeah, except for I think that Mac Jones is pretty doggone good, though, too.
Mac Jones is good. Mac Jones should have been a Pac-12 quarterback. He was so close to committing to ASU, but then your boy.
Everybody allegedly is so close to committing to
I can tell you exactly ASU. What happened. ASU flipped Ryan Kelly from Oregon which took the spot that Mac Jones was going to take. But the ASU was down to three quarterbacks. Mac Jones, I think it was Mac Jones, Tyler Lytle, and Chase Garbers were all looking at ASU. And Oregon flips Ryan Kelly, or ASU flips Ryan Kelly, and that left Oregon without a quarterback when Tua Tagovailoa wanted to go to Oregon. So, like, the Ryan Kelly butterfly effect is one of the weirdest things to happen in college football. Ryan Kelly never played it down. He never played it down. He tore up his elbow and never played again. So, but you had, I mean, I talked to Mac Jones in the airport on the way to his ASU visit, and you can ask your boy Woody Womack. We were 100% convinced he was going to commit. And then it just, everything went sideways. It was very, very bizarre. And then Tua, who should have been at Oregon, and Mac Jones, who should have been at ASU, both end up at Alabama, and they're both having a ridiculous amount of success.
Yep. Crazy how these things happen. All right, so now we can get to this week's games. We can pick this week's games, and listen, this one of those games, you can throw the records out this week, Ralph. You can throw the records out. I'm coming back. I will dominate this week, Ralph. I promise. I promise. All right. We'll start with, should we start with the Pac-12 championship or end with the Pac-12 championship?
Well, it's on Friday. Let's just roll with it. Let's go. Okay. We'll go with it first.
Pac-12 championship, Oregon Ducks versus the number three vaunted, unstoppable, unbeatable, incredible Clay Helton coach of the year led USC Trojans. They have Keaton Slovis, preseason Heisman Trophy candidate, Drake London, Drake London, uncoverable slot, dual threat guy, tight end, wide receiver hybrid. They have, you know, Malapai, unstoppable running back. They have Drake Jackson, unblockable force on the outside on the defense. There's no way Oregon can win this game, Ralph. And USC's favored by 3 points. over under is 64. Who you got? I'm gonna let you pick first this time, and not let you piggyback off of me. That's probably been the problem.
I don't like having to pick against an Arizona boy because it doesn't matter who I pick again. These are both Arizona quarterbacks, right? You know how I feel about Arizona players, Arizona quarterbacks. It's a weird matchup because Oregon can't stop the run and USC can't start the run except for this last week. So maybe they're changing up their philosophy a little bit. I don't know. I am excited to see, I'm going to roll with, USC and Isaiah Polamau. I think that he ultimately makes the difference. Tyler Shuck hasn't been making the best decisions this year.
He's leading the conference in pass efficiency, though.
Are you sure he's not leading the conference in rushing attempts? Because they freaking get him on these designed runs all the time. He's 6'5", 200-something pound pocket passer, and they're treating him like he's Marcus Mariota. I don't know.
Dude, they run him more than they ran Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert's probably a better athlete.
Give me the over all day long. Give me the over all day long. I will take USC almost a push. I'm going to say it's going to be a 3-point USC win, but I'll take USC just because that's not anything calling for a push. Might get extra points if I call it a push.
Yeah, if you call it a push, if you call the shot, dude, that's like double zeros. But all right. but if you go that route, you should lose 2 points though. Just because it's cowardice.
Cowardice? How can it be so brave that I would get extra points for doing it and then
it's high risk, high reward.
Oh, man. You know what's crazy is the amount of house money that I have, and it's the end of the season. I will call my shot right here. This is going to be a 3-point USC win. I don't know if it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be a 3-point USC win because of Parker Lewis, though, because I don't know if you saw, but he missed probably the worst field goal of all against UCLA I've ever seen.
No way, bro. He missed. No, you missed Oregon's kicker against they had the walk on versus Cal, but it was, I think, the UCLA game. No, it was the Oregon State game. Worst kick of all time. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Oregon Ducks. Unbelievable. I know it's unbelievable that I picked the Ducks. But this is the first game this season that they have not been favored in. They haven't covered, except for, I think, their first game of the season. I am picking the Ducks. This is where Clay Helton, because this is a big game for Mario Cristobal. This is a recruiting game. This is a game for recruits because this is going to be talked about. This is Dante Williams. There's so much behind the scenes going on, and the Ducks haven't won a game in a while. They haven't played a game in a while, but they haven't won a game in a while because they lost two in a row. So they haven't won in a month.
They have not won in 29 days. As of the day this game gets played,
yep.
Oregon will not have won in 4 weeks.
Yep. Guess what, buddy? This is going to be a win. Give me the Ducks. Give me the over in this too. Give me the over in this. I would take Oregon if they were favored by 5 points. So there's that. Next game up, Stanford at the UCLA Bruins. UCLA's favorite by 7 points. I don't know how they're going to rebound mentally from that loss. I like UCLA to win this. No, I'm sorry. It's on you first, Ralph. My bad.
I'll take Stanford to cover. It's a home game, you said, for UCLA?
Yes, in the Rose Bowl, in the granddaddy of them all.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go ahead and take UCLA to win and Stanford to cover. Why not? Stanford's been playing everybody close. They've been playing everybody respectably. I don't fully trust Dorian Thompson-Robinson to be able to go out and blow anybody out. I think even if it wouldn't traditionally be close, he'll find a way to make it close.
Yep.
I think it's a little bit of a rebound game for your guy, Dimitri Felton, not my guy. I don't know. I don't know if Stanford can play better than they played last week. And they still, it took a fumble for them to be able to come out with a win. So I don't believe that they have the offensive firepower to just go out and take a game. That would be a huge surprise to me. It would definitely not be a good look for UCLA defense that was playing really well to give up 5 touchdown passes to Keaton Slovis and then take on the former number one overall quarterback recruit and have the same thing happen again. So I think you're going to see a little bit of a bounce back from UCLA's defense. I don't think Stanford's offense is all that capable anyway. And so, let's roll with a 6-point win for the Bruins.
Ralph, finally, you've gotten your picks back on track. I'm agreeing with you on both sides of this. For every reason that you said, Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to throw them into amazing plays and a lot of points, but then also throw Stanford back into the game or fumble them back into the game because UCLA, even though they're much better, they're still an accident waiting to happen. Like they just are. They're not used to. They're much better, and I am going to probably pick them as my preseason favorite next year in the South. But right now, they're not there yet. Next game up.
What was the over under on that game? I don't think we did.
Oh, 59.
Oof, under.
That's 30 points apiece. Yeah. I'm going with the over in this game, buddy. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'm going with the over because UCLA can't stop the run and Stanford. Yeah. I'm going with the over. And oh, and in the USC Oregon game, I took the over too there. I'm an over guy. Washington at Utah. Utah is favored by 10.5 points, Ralph. 10.5 points. It's in Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake City.
So wait, Washington can play now, but only if it's Saturday?
No, Washington State.
Oh, I was so confused.
The Cougs.
Okay.
The Cougs.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever the line is, give me Utah. Give me everything on Utah right now.
Lies! The lies! Ralph, you blew it. You blew it. The thing that Washington State doesn't do well is cover the pass. Utah's going to try to run. And Utah is great stopping the run, but not so good stopping the pass. Ralph, you blew it right here. Find a sucker every day. I got you right.
These aren't Mike Leach's Cougs, and Mike Leach had another rant again this week. I'm sure we'll get into that later. He called this the most joyless season of our lives or something like that. Like,
yeah, I'm so over him. He'll be out of the SEC in 2 years anyway. So yeah.
He'll probably be back. Nick Rolovich will play himself into a bigger job and he'll have to come back to Pullman.
Over under 56 points.
I'm going to say, ooh, that's a tough one. I'm going to say under.
I'm taking it under in this game, too. Now, actually, no, I'm going completely against you in this game because you don't know what you're talking about. So I'm taking it over in this game, too.
I think Utah's rolling. I think they've put together, I mean, that first half against Washington was really great. That second half against Colorado was really great. If they can put a full game together, that'd be really impressive. Then maybe, again, they'll just have the wheels fall off for a full game. That's the other side of that.
10.5 feels absurd to me, dude. Feels absurd.
It's 10.5. See, I didn't even ask what it was before. I'm on a 10.5 point line.
Yeah. That's why I say sucker board every day, buddy.
That's funny.
Next game up. Last game on the slate. Arizona State has to travel to Corvallis to forge against the Oregon State Beavers.
Yuck.
ASU's favored by 7.5 points. Over under 54. Who you got, Ralph?
Should this game be happening, George? At least in Corvallis.
I don't see why not. Why?
Because it's Oregon State. It's Oregon State
played all six of their games. So,
and this will be their fifth home game, and Arizona State has played one game in Sun Devil Stadium.
Well,
and it's Corvallis in late December.
Yep.
That sounds terrible. It's going to rain.
Yep. I didn't know if you saw that. Jeez.
These kids are from the desert and the Inland Empire and the beach. They don't need to be. You give the Corvallis kids a break. Let them go on the road and play in decent weather. Like, it's punishing everybody for no reason. I don't trust that line at all. I don't trust ASU in Corvallis. They lost there last year. They lost the opportunity to go to the college football playoff in 2014 up there. This is not something that Arizona State has ever responded well to. And if the weather is going to be gross at the same time and the season's basically over for them anyway, this is very weird. I will take Arizona State to find a way to pull it out, but I don't like the 7.5. So I'll take Oregon State's with the plus 7.5. And then, I'm going to go with the 54.
Yep, 54.
Oh, and ASU scored 70 on their own. But they only scored 18. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to go under.
Oh, Ralph, you were almost on the right track, dude. Oregon State's winning this football game. They're playing in Corvallis in the weather. Fog is probably going to – I'm praying for fog. And this game will hit the over because neither team is going to be able to stop a nosebleed, really. Arizona State's going to run the football. But if that fog rolls in, then the under could possibly hit. All right, I'm going to stay with the under. Actually, I'm going to go with the under. Oregon State wins this football game outright. Who did you have winning the Stanford-UCLA game?
I
had the same thing on you there. Okay, cool. We are all set with that.
I have a question for you because I wrote a big long thing for ArizonaVarsity.com, my website, on 12 candidates that I think the Arizona should take a look at. Not 12 that I think that they should hire, but 12 that I think that they should go through a lengthy interview process. But I also broke that they were going through turnkey for a coaching search firm. So it's not going to be them going out handpicking people to interview. But I think it's coming down to three very, very possible names, maybe four. And those four will say Joe Salavea, the current D-line and associate head coach out at University of Oregon, who was an Arizona Wildcat. Brent Brennan, the current head coach of the currently undefeated San Jose State Spartans, who used to be the wide receivers coach out at Oregon State before he took this head coaching job. Jay Norvell, who is the very well-traveled wide receiver coach / OC from Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, who was a wide receivers coach for N'Keal Harry at ASU before taking the head job at Nevada. They are 6-2 this year. And the other option that they are potentially looking at is Ken Niumatalolo from Navy. Of those four, George, who do you think Arizona should hire to be their next head coach and why?
Hire the man from Navy, run the triple option like they were considering doing last time.
Why? Why run the triple option?
No. That was a joke, Ralph. That was a joke. I probably go with Jay Norvell because I do think that they need to be balling on a budget with this hire. They have to make sure that they get a good hire.
He's probably got the biggest buyout of anybody, though.
Oh,
I think he'd be perfect for the job. In fact, I think he would. By far and away is the best candidate for the job. Brent Brennan would be good because he's a shit shoveler and they got a lot of shit to shovel down there. Like he's always only ever had to grind, whether it was in Corvallis or definitely now at San Jose State. And it's going to be a grind, so he could be a good choice. But Jay Norvell is a disciplinarian, son of, you know, military, like has a great, young, innovative staff, runs the air raid on offense, answers based defense with almost like a Craig Bowl disciple running his defense. Like I think that would be a great ready-made staff to bring over, but he got a $2.5 million buyout.
That's not a big college buyout though.
Yeah. They just paid the 7.5 to go get. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could figure out a way to, I guess they could always figure it out if that's who the school really wanted. It's amazing where they keep finding all this money when they furloughed all their workers and everything at University of Arizona.
I was saying that. I was like, how are they going to keep, like, they cried poor. Oh, we don't have money. We have to play the season, all this. And then you go firing coaches and paying buyouts. Yeah, that makes sense.
It would be great to find out that the buyout was paid by, like, Kourtney Kardashian. She's a Wildcat. Or, like, Gronk or something. Like that'd be really, really funny to find out that one of their like celebrities was responsible. But then the alumni, you know who they want. They all want Joe Salavea. You think he would make the jump?
Nope. They cannot have Joe Salavea. He's a national treasure at Oregon with all the poly kids, especially no, but on a serious note, I think he would be. I think he's actually the right hire. I was joking with Jay. I mean, I think Jay Norvell would be a good hire, but I think Salabay is the actual answer.
He put together the best D-line class I've ever seen for the class of 2019 at Oregon.
Yeah. So, the dude has all the stuff. So, selfishly, I don't want to lose him, but you have to let people fly. Like, you have to let them go do their thing because he's earned the opportunity. And so, yeah, so he deserves it. So, yeah, I would give him the job.
Is there any one of them that can win at Arizona?
I think winning at Arizona is relative. I think that you can compete regularly, and then you have to pull a Utah. Like, there are going to be certain times where you're, like, super good, and you can capitalize on that and make a Rose Bowl or make a Fiesta Bowl or something like that. I think that has to be your goal, not college football championships.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time. Appreciate your energy. Thanks for listening to the show. And of course, share with a friend. Leave a review and a written review as well. Peace out. Catch you guys. Oh, next episode, recruiting. We are going deep dive into recruiting rankings and what happened on early signing day. Peace out.
And the social media teams behind the recruiting.
Oh, yes. The drama. Somebody's a biter, not a writer for their self and others. All right. Peace out. Catch you guys next episode.